Good evening. It is Tuesday, September 28th, 2021. It is 7 p.m. and this is a regular assembly meeting of the City and Borough of Wrangell, Alaska. Tonight, the Pledge of Allegiance will be led by Assemblymember Aaron Morrison.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Aaron. All right, ceremonial matters. We have a proclamation tonight to read. It is the 100th anniversary of the Irene Engel Public Library. So this is a long one here. So bear with me. Commemorating the 100th anniversary of the Irene Engel Public Library, November 2021. Whereas the Irene Engel Public Library is celebrating its 100th year anniversary of providing library services to the community of Wrangell in 2021, and whereas the public library was founded in Wrangell, Alaska in November of 1921, and whereas in 1974 bonds were sold in the amount of $157,000 to construct and build specifically designed for a library, the total cost of the building was $176,000. Whereas the City Council named the library in honor of Irene Engel when she retired in 1980 after 33 years of service. And whereas in 1993, an expansion and renovation project were completed, which is now the current library. Grants totaling $653,344 were received from the state of Alaska and the federal government for most of the costs, with the City of Wrangell contributed in-kind donations and cash amounting to $8,000. And whereas a grant was received by the Friends of the Library and the construction of the gazebo, additional parking, and landscaping was completed in 2001. And whereas in 2006, the roof was replaced for $162,648, of which the USDA granted $100,000. And whereas the Irene Engel Public Library provides many benefits to the community, such as free access to materials and resources, improves the quality of life to the Wrangell community, contributes to public education, provides lifelong learning opportunities to residents, serves as a community center, provides free community meeting spaces, provides internet access, offers workshops on subjects relevant to the community interests and needs, and provides various programs to improve literacy and reading skills. And whereas the Irene Public Library has had a long-term successful partnership with the Wrangell Cooperative Association, Friends of the Library, Wrangell Chamber of Commerce, Wrangell Public School District, Wrangell Parks and Recreation, local businesses, and its patrons to further the services it provides. And whereas the Friends of the Library will be hosting an open house and reception on October 28, 2021 from 2 p.m. to 4 p.m. to celebrate. And whereas the public libraries are vital community centers providing essential services to the residents of their municipalities, even more so during these difficult economic times. Now, therefore, be it resolved by Mayor Stephen Prasanka and the Borough Assembly of the City and Borough of Wrangell, Alaska, that it hereby commemorates the 100th anniversary of the Irene Public Library. I'd just like to add one other thing. So 25 years ago, we rolled in with a young family, and my wife's pretty fresh out of medical school, driving around the town trying to figure things out. And K.J. Bush was outside watering plants, and we stopped, and my wife jumped out, and we got a tour of the library, and it was one of the selling features that brought us here. Went out for dinner the other night with two young doctors that want to move to Wrangell, and the library was again held up as a selling feature. It is one of the best kept buildings in our community, and it is absolutely vital, and it draws in folks, so we can't say enough and how much we appreciate all the effort that you folks put into keeping that place vital and kept up and looking good, and it doesn't cost us a lot. So we really do appreciate that. And to the initial people that had the foresight to raise $176,000, which in today's dollars, Jeff, what would we be looking at? $2-3 million?
Well, you could build an outhouse for that.
That's right. That's a tribal smokehouse there. So thank you very much. We really appreciate all of your efforts in the library. Thank you. Kate, or Margaret, do you want to say something?
No, I was just saying.
Can I pass this down for you? And
no, just everybody come to the open house.
Yes.
And have everybody there.
Can I tell you just a short little story?
Yeah, of course.
When we were doing the addition for the library, we didn't have a contingency fund at all. And when we had to move the light pole from the side of the library to the back, and Jim Nelson was in charge of the light department at that time, and he said, well, it's going to cost you just many thousands of dollars. I said, Jim, we got $25. I can give you that and some cookies. That's all I got. You know, well, I'll take that. You're in the department anyway. Just do it.
Well, you know, it really is a source of pride. It is one building that is just held up and maintained and just kept up, and it's an example for the rest of the city. It really is. So thank you, guys. All right. That is the longest proclamation I've ever read.
I just have a quick question. Probably, okay, what part is the original part?
You know where the stained glass is hanging there, that wall, the checkout desk?
Oh, yes.
So you could look up in the ceiling, and there's a beam that goes that way. So it would be that section and the wall that's on that side. So if we added 20 to...
Where the kids' side is.
Yeah, all the kids' side we added. Kitchen. And we added probably 20 feet in the front. But you can barely see the difference in the ceiling because we told the architects it has to look like it was built all at one time. We don't want it to look like an add-on. Mm-hmm. So... But somebody can point that out to you, but it's that one wall from the office that used to be the outside wall.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Well, thanks very much, and I'm glad you guys came down tonight. Yeah. Jeff, if you want to hang out for a while, I'm sure you'll be here.
40 years is long enough.
Mason's giving us a full-on PowerPoint here in a minute, so thank you, you guys.
Thank you, guys.
Bye-bye. Bye. All right. Moving on, please call the roll, Kim.
Yes. Assembly members Corson?
Here.
Gilbert?
Here.
Morrison?
Here.
Ryan Howe?
Here.
Darrenville?
Here.
David
Powell? Here.
And Mayor
Persaud. And I'm here as well. Item number 3 tonight is persons to be heard. Section WMC 3.05.040C states that the chair may call to order any person who is breaching the peace or being disorderly by speaking without recognition, engaging in booing or catcalls, speaking vulgarities, name-calling, personal attacks, or engaging in other conduct which is determined by the chair to be disruptive of the meeting. Any person so disturbing a meeting of the assembly may be removed and barred from further attendance at that meeting unless permission to return or remain is granted by a majority vote of the assembly. So tonight we have Mr. Murphy, we have you up. You're the only person speaking tonight, so please come on up.
We'll go over here.
You bet, sir. We'll give you a good solid 3 minutes. How does that sound?
Yeah, well, I hope so. Well, I could use more than that if you get it.
I'm sure you could.
Anyway, first of all, the reason why I'm here is because the Sentinel won't print my letters to the editor, so I wanted to tell you guys what I thought, so I thought I'd better show up in person. Masks are useless as Joe Biden. That's my subject tonight, masks and vaccinations. The one thing they have in common is they're both detrimental, Joe Biden and masks. Masks on airplanes. I was corrected twice where riding the jet. It was head slipped below my nose. Nose and mouth. And then they give us pretzels and coffee and everybody takes their masks off. Show me some science to say the virus knows it can't bother you. It's all insanity. Anyway, the virus is too small to be caught by these masks. So they're useless. That's why I say they're useless. They don't work. You put them on kids, I think that's child abuse. They wear it all day and they get all this doggone moisture and fungus and bacteria and stuff connected into these doggone masks. Besides, they're not getting enough oxygen for their brain. Anyway. Now, if this pandemic is really as serious as they say it is, we'd see homeless dying all over the place. There'd be trucks going along picking them up. Nothing like that's happening. I'm not saying we don't have a virus. I'm just saying it's way blown out of proportion. And I'm opposed to pushing this mask mandate and vaccine mandate anywhere. If you want to wear a mask, that's fine, but don't force somebody else. In North Carolina, one of the hospitals there, they're firing 175 doctors and nurses because they won't take the vaccine. Kind of gives you a clue that it might be a little challenge to it. The inventor of the mRNA vaccine, Dr. Robert Malone, he regrets taking the shot. Don't challenge the unvaccinated. Maybe they're the ones that are smart ones. But that's the reason why hospitals are having problems with beds and stuff, because a lot of their staff are having to quit or being fired because they won't take the vaccine. And besides, it's not in a vaccine anyway, it's gene therapy. It's insanity. The Nuremberg rules. It came out of the Nuremberg trials in 1947. It says people don't have to be injected with stuff they don't want. I mean, didn't we learn anything? I mean, this is fascism. We got Washington, D.C. pushing down these rules that they can't legally do, but to put pressure on companies and everybody else to enforce their laws or their rules or their emotions. That's fascism. The Democrats.
Steve, I'm going to give you about 30 seconds to wrap her up, okay?
What's that?
30 seconds to wrap her up, sir.
Oh, damn. Anyway, survival rate from the CDC numbers, 0 to 19, 99.997%. 20 to 49, 99.98%. 50 to 69, 99.5%. 70 plus, 94.6%. That's survival rate from this COVID. Doesn't sound that serious. Flus from 2012 to 13, 34 million had it. 2018 to 19, 36 million had the flu. 60,000 died. And one of the reasons why we had so many deaths with this vaccine is because of the way they were treated in the hospitals. They were given remdesivir. It'll kill you. That messes up your kidney. Then your body fills with fluid and you end up with pneumonia. I'll be damned.
Okay, Steve. We'll get you to finish her up here.
Okay, I'm finishing up right now.
Yep.
There are cures for the COVID-19. The hydrochloroquine, ivermectin. I use quercetin and... where is it? Remdesivir. Those are ways of getting around it. We don't need these vaccines. And besides, the... CEO of Pfizer got turned down going into Israel because he wasn't vaccinated.
Okay.
He said to Wall Street that he expects to make $29 billion on these boosters.
Okay, Steve. Thank you very much. Thank you very much for coming out tonight. I appreciate it. I gave you a full 5 minutes there, buddy, to talk
well,
to
us. Hell, I just got started.
That's more than I ever
did. Bob knows once, but it's kind of hard for me to stop once it starts.
Oh, you're good. You're all good. Thank
the
you
Democrats'
for
main agenda is about depopulation. That's what okay. It's all about.
Thank you for coming down and sharing your opinion, Steve. Be safe. Okay.
Appreciate your patience.
So thank you, sir. All right. Is there anybody else that'd like to be heard? I'm not seeing anyone. So, Kim, that looks like our full list there, correct? Thank you. Item number 4, amendments to the agenda. Anybody have any amendments to the agenda?
Mr. Mayor?
Yeah.
We've been asked by the two organizations that requested the Transboundary Water Resolution to postpone that until October 12th, please.
So that is, sorry, help me.
Item 12A.
12A. Thank you. Yeah. So we are going to postpone item 12A until next week, 2 weeks from now.
October 12th, yeah.
October 12th. Thank you. Any other amendments to the agenda? Hearing none. Is there any conflicts of interest tonight?
Possibly.
Yes, go ahead, Terry.
Anything related to my wife being an employee with the city?
Yes, there is. I believe under the executive session that will be falling, so we'll have you recluse yourself on that one.
Okay.
Is there any arguments from the assembly on that? None. Thank you, Terry. Any other conflicts of interest? Hearing none. Item 6, consent agenda.
Move to approve consent agenda as presented.
Moved by Gilbert.
Second.
Seconded by Morrison. Any discussion? Hearing none, poll vote, please.
Yes, assembly members Gilbert?
Yes.
Morrison?
Yes.
Ryan Howe?
Yes.
Dalrymple?
Yes.
David Powell?
Yes.
Corson?
Yes.
And Mayor Morrison?
Yes. Item number 7 is the Borough Manager Report. Lisa.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I have a couple of items, and then I'm going to ask both Captain Spray and Director Wade-Ord to provide a little bit of information. So I'd like to first this evening do our recognition, a longevity recognition, those employees that have anniversaries in September. So I'd like to recognize Mason Valarma, who's been working for us for 3 weeks. I'd like to recognize Rhonda Herman in the police department. She's been with us a year. I'd like to recognize Sergeant Nick Pearson, who's been with the police department for 3 years. And I would especially like to recognize Jeff Rooney, who's been working for the city and borough of Wrangell for 30 years this
year.
Wow. So my thanks to those individuals for giving their time and choosing to have part of their careers with the city and borough of Wrangell. In some good news, the city has finalized all the paperwork for the state ARPA grant, and we'll be receiving $603,000. There'll be a resolution coming at the next meeting to accept that money, amend the budget and accept that money. And then in the near future, the assembly will need to hold a work session to decide how we want to expend or potentially expend those and the federal ARPA funds that we've got. And that federal is about $483,000. So that's good news. The other thing I want to do is alert the assembly that we were successful in the Homeland Security grant that we applied for and have received additional funding totaling $339,469 to help fund two previously partially funded projects by Homeland Security, which is the security camera system for the ports and harbor and the backup generator at the Nolan Center. So we don't have the breakdown of what goes into that, but I want to thank Amber and Carol and Steve for their work securing those grant funds. We received our audited financial statements for FY20 at the end of last week. Mason has been reviewing those thoroughly and has met with the auditors, and that will be before the assembly next month, probably at the first meeting of the month. So as the assembly is aware, I mentioned to you at the end of last week, we are within our limits for the rolling average for water quality for haloacetic acid. However, we have committed to testing monthly, and August is one of the regular quarterly tests, and we are at 70 parts per billion. And I'm actually going to ask Tom Wador to speak a little bit to one of the activities that the water department just engaged in to try to help with our water quality a little bit.
Thanks, Lisa. Good evening, Mr. Mayor, Assembly Members, Borough Manager, and everybody listening in at home. So, yes, we did get our results. The good news is we are under our running average. The bad news is we were still outside of compliance for our August sampling. To put things into context for everybody, our six-year average for our August sampling for HA5s is 84.67. So our results of 70 parts per billion this August is slightly under what our six-year average is, which is what I have data for these samples for the last 6 years. Kind of as a proactive measure and also in response to the substantial amount of rain that we have gotten in the month of September, we're averaging, I think it's around an inch a day of rain in the month of September. We were starting to see color and turbidity substantially increase entering into the water plant. And so yesterday, our staff did some flushing of the lines. We got the 6 mile line out Zamovia Highway completely turned over. We ran into some complications on the north end of town. Historically, we had done the flushing right off Evergreen Street, as 5th and Graves were some of our weakest links, so to speak. We were trying to do the flushing off those roads, off of our nice new HDPE pipes that were put in this summer. Ran into some issues with the valves. Jeff Rooney and our staff were able to remedy that situation today and get all valves functioning and working. And so tomorrow we're probably going to look at doing some more flushing on that side of town. And so we believe this will be beneficial as we have increases in turbidity and color going into the plant. Likely more of that is going to make it through the system, and that's what ends up reacting with the chlorine in the distribution system, which causes our disinfection byproduct levels to increase. And so essentially we are trying to dump some of that water out that potentially had high levels of organics or turbidity to get a little bit cleaner water into the system. Now, that being said, it is a little bit of a double-edged sword, I guess. In order for us to do this flushing, we have to ramp up production at the plant, and we draw down on the tanks to empty this amount of water out. And so then in order to recover from that, we have to increase our production, so we're increasing flow through the plant. If you increase flow through the plant a couple hundred gallons per minute, you could see increases in turbidity or color or things like that making it through the plant. And so on one hand, you're getting rid of water that we know was high in these levels, but when we increase production, we also increase those a little bit. Now, I think that big picture, we still gained more than what we would have lost on this, but nonetheless, it's something for us to keep an eye on. And just for the community's sake, I just want to reiterate something that Borough Manager Von Bargen had said. This is typically the time of year where we struggle the most with these issues. It's typically August and November, those quarterly samples. We will continue to do the monthly testing to keep a pulse on where things are at. But just for reference, for August, the six-year average is 84.67 parts per billion for haloacetic acids. For November, that six-year average is 72.67, which is still over compliance standards. February and May, on the other hand, are both closer to 45 parts per billion for the same sampling. So our water quality increases in the improves, I should say, in the springtime. This time of the year, with organic material dying off, all the rain that we've been getting, it washing into the system, increases color, organics, turbidity, all of these things. So that's a little bit of why we are where we are. Does anybody have any questions?
Questions for Mr. Weider. Assemblymember Gilbert.
Well, I'm trying to formulate a question, but is there any mechanism where we can notify the public and any options that that we can suggest that the public take? I know it's not harmful unless you consume mass quantities of it, the haloacetic acids, but is there some, you say you're testing monthly, when you see a problem, do you test even more than monthly? And how involved is the testing?
We have not been testing more than monthly. I would say a big reason for that is probably cost. We do pay to ship this out on Alaska Airlines and things like that, and I'd have to get you an exact number. I don't have that off the top of my head of what it costs for each sample, but that's...
The wait time on the testing turnaround is several weeks as well.
Okay, so that's not the answer. But, I just wonder if we could put out not an alert, but a notice that you may experience a change in color in the water.
We've had some of those put out. I've seen them. I mean, we
have been issuing water quality updates. We just put one out.
Yeah, I know, but I was thinking more frequently as the situation demands.
Yes, I mean, we can try to do more. We have been providing updates as the level changes each month, every time we get a sample. We did go for a period where we had no issues for several months, and so we didn't do an update then. But as soon as stuff changes, we can try to look at doing more. You bet.
So, Tom, my question is, and this is completely anecdotal, but over the past 6 years, I have not noticed an increase in turbidity in the months that we're talking about. I haven't seen that sort of increased organic in my house water. I just haven't. I mean, I'm kind of amazed at how much organics is in the water.
Mm-hmm.
When you do a 6-year average, I'm just wondering, is there any other factor that's going on up at the plant that is causing that level of organics to move through the system, through the slow sand, through the roughing filters, to all of it that we're seeing? Because we've had heavy rains before, and I haven't seen this. And when that plant was new, I mean, I remember when it came online, because we used to bathe in tea.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, the water was super clean. And it was super clean in August, and it was super clean in September, and it was super clean. And now it's not super clean. So it says to me that I appreciate your 6-year rolling average, but there's something different. And are we nailing that down? Like, and then my fear is that these filters are just so far past their useful life that sand just needs to be replaced. Maybe I'm wrong, but I'm telling you that it just doesn't line up for me in my mind that all of a sudden we're seeing all these increases.
Yeah, you know, I just looked back through the data that I had access to, which was back to 2015, and I just basically took what the test samples were and averaged those out. As far as the plant goes, I think there could be a number of different things in addition to just rainfall that would have an effect on these things increasing, whether that was, you know, we lost ozone production for some reason, or the media in the filters hasn't been replaced in a long time and is starting to, you know, grind down or it's not as sharp as it used to be, the little particulates and particles and everything like that. It's wore down, basically. You know, if the dosing, which is done manually at the plant, you know, there's times when, you know, our operators are trying to use their experience to get that correct. And what I mean by that is if crabbing is going to open up tomorrow, we could expect that we're going to see 200 gallons per minute increase at the plant, and so our operators are going to adjust for that. Now, there's times if a water main breaks in the middle of the night and we draw down a bunch of water and somebody doesn't go there and manually adjust that, this is going to have an effect on test results down the road. And some of that could be timing with when we time the tests and around events like that happening. And so there could be a number of different issues, I guess, that could be contributing to this.
Okay. Thank you. Anyone else? Thanks. Tom, appreciate your time tonight.
Thank you.
Mr. Mayor, I'd like to ask Captain Spray to give a COVID update, if that's okay.
Captain Spray, we've had one update tonight.
Yeah, we did. One.
Mr. Mayor.
Yeah.
I'm going to.
Yes, go ahead. Good evening.
Good evening. We had an update, and I don't even know how to come back from that. So it's just such different information than what I have to relay to you guys tonight. So I guess it's not a repeat. Right now, I think we were a little bit premature in our reporting in the newspaper last week. We said, thank you, Wrangell, everybody. We had zero cases. And I'm superstitious, and I think we jinxed ourselves, so we are at 9 now. And unfortunately, the state of Alaska altogether We are first in the nation for daily averages per 100,000. The highest, highest in the nation, West Virginia, in second place at only 92 per 100,000, with Alaska at 179. It's five times the national average. National average right now is 36 per 100,000. So we are at 4.97. Not doing very well. There are many communities that have implemented, either for the first time, a mask mandate or travel ordinance and such. Here, close around us, Petersburg just reinstated their masking in borough facilities. Their school is in a red, and they have 29 active cases right now. Hoona with 24, they are red. They closed their city facilities. They require testing upon arrival, and masks are mandatory. Ketchikan, 62, active. They've done away with their EOC to some extent. They've brought reinstituted some of these things, so they're keeping track and posting this information now. Juneau had 137 in the past 2 days. They are also in the red. Sitka, 42 in the past 2 days, also in the red. And it's just, I mean, that's what we've got going on. Currently, we have 209 throughout the state that they're reporting hospitalized. But as you know, the numbers for hospitalizations are delayed. It doesn't just automatically, as soon as you are admitted to the hospital, go right onto the dashboard. So we'll see that number fluctuate a bit. And along with the daily case count numbers, those ones are also fluctuating as they're going through a big backlog. The trend is still up, but those numbers come out and they're quite astonishing. At the 1,800 the other day, and it included not only the day's case count, but also some backlog stuff. Either way, we are on a pretty significant spike, and we are in the biggest surge that we've been in throughout the pandemic. On a good note, though, Northern Southeast, which is what we're included in, is second only to Juneau as far as vaccination status. So we are at 78.7% for those vaccinated, and Juneau is at 81.3%. Altogether, Alaskans are at 59%. There's been a lot of discussion about the booster shots or third dose shots for those who are immunocompromised. Those who are immunocompromised for the third dose, whether they were vaccinated with Pfizer or Moderna, are eligible for that. However, the booster shot for those who were not immunocompromised but maybe work in an environment that puts them at higher risk, that is only for Pfizer. That's the only one that's been approved there. They do expect Moderna information to come out here in the next 2 weeks. So people 18 to 64 who are at an increased risk for COVID-19 through exposure or transmission because of where they work or live may receive the Pfizer booster if they're at least 6 months after their second dose of their Pfizer vaccine. Those 65 and older should receive their Pfizer booster, again, if they're 6 months after their second dose. 50 to 64, again, with underlying health issues, should receive. And 18 to 49 with underlying health issues may receive. This is information from the state and a little flyer that they've put out to help people understand where they're at, where they fall, and what they're eligible for. Flu shots can be co-administered with any dose of your vaccine if you're interested in getting the flu shot. I will recommend calling the clinic. I know there's discussions about vaccines, and vaccines are important to all of us to help us get out of the pandemic, but right now, today, the layering effect with non-pharmaceuticals are going to kind of help us immediately. Masking, social distancing, and if we can reduce our group size. Nothing's changed. If you feel sick, stay home. Consider scheduling yourself a test. And if you do test positive, consider contacting your close contacts public health is extremely overworked right now, and they're trying to keep up, and people are waiting a really long time, and it's just kind of impossible to contact all of their close contacts. In regards to testing, Search conducts all of our testing. That hasn't changed since the earliest part of our pandemic, or since the very beginning, excuse me. However, they did just change their airport testing due to unforeseen staffing issues. They had intended to move their testing over to the clinic away from the hospital, or excuse me, away from the airport as of October 1st. That happened a little bit earlier, again, due to unforeseen staffing. So all testing for anybody can be done at the clinic from 12 to 4 Monday through Saturday. And you can call the clinic 874-7000 with any questions. And I believe, I don't know if Lisa was going to include, I know our contract for non-congregate sheltering at the Harding Sourdough Lodge is due to expire on September 30th. I don't know if there
is. We had a discussion about that, Lisa and I, and I think she's electing to re-up that given sort of the recent uptick and... So I think that was her plan, but I'm not sure what was finally settled on that. Dorianne, can you? It's my understanding that travel testing contract mandate. Sorry, you know, we have a mandate for that expires this Thursday. Is that the case?
That is, yes. It would be our recommendation. I was not available for the meeting yesterday morning between Lisa and my backup, Jamie Roberts. And they discussed letting the airport test or the testing requirement expire because of the added, I guess, hiccup you would have to, or, you know, stuff you would have to go through to get to the clinic. If we're asking people to come off of the airplane and providing testing right there at the airport and saying this is mandatory and it's right here, we're making it available, unless we're going to provide a shuttle service or some way for them to get there, it's not really an enforceable thing. It hasn't been.
Excuse me. Okay. And what are we setting up at the airport? Are we hiring some senior greeters? Are we, we've got sandwich board signs saying, here's how you can test it. What do we got going on there?
Search put up a sandwich board to indicate... big, bold, red and white to let people know where they can get tested, that they can get tested at the clinic or at the Wrangell Medical Center there. And the date and time is available on that. They're working with their PR team to get information out to the general public in other fashions as well.
Great. Any other comments up, Bob?
Do you know how many of the cases that we've been getting are picked up at the airport screen? Do you have a way to tell that? Last nine.
I don't get informed exactly of that. We get informed if somebody has traveled recently. Oh, and I have that written down. So I'm not sure how many of ours were done through our airport testing.
Would you expect that we would be in the dark now, have less knowledge about active tests until they're serious? Or are people going to the clinic and after they're quite sick to get that verified, I guess?
I don't understand the question, sorry.
Yeah.
How the people that are, do you expect without any airport screening that people would, I'm not seeing that there's going to be a huge rush to go, like zero people would go to the clinic from the airport.
Actually, Alicia gave us an update and did say that there were some folks who had just traveled in their first day of implementing that, and it was there was no message out to the community, really, besides for that sandwich board, and some folks who had just flown in were at the test site that day. So, and I know right now they're full with testing, so if you were to call to get a test, they've been quite busy up there. So I hope that people wouldn't wait until... You know,
my
super
concern,
sick, but...
just to frame it in, is that most of these are travel related, and in my mind, I don't know if they're getting picked up because they got the test at the airport and we knew about it and they knew about it, or they go home, they don't test and they get sick and then they go.
Mm-hmm.
Just, you know,
so
I don't know if we're doing the right thing, I guess.
statewide, and we still have time to do something different, I believe. Statewide, the tests that were conducted at the airport have declined just with the less travelers. But on the flip side of that, vaccinations, which are offered at the four larger airports, actually doubled. So, but I know statewide it had almost cut in half. So I don't know if there's still time to continue the travel.
Well, in the past, Assemblymember Dalrymple, I have requested that we don't just allow things to expire, that they come back to us, and we have a discussion about them so that we're, you know, number one, the public is informed, and number two, we have the option of re-upping. And so what I would ask, that we have a special meeting coming up on Friday, and I would ask that we get this onto that agenda as well, and give the assembly a chance to discuss it and see if we want it just to expire. But I prefer these things not just to kind of go away without a discussion.
We had a conversation about bringing them back to you. It was going to be at the first meeting in October, but yes, that conversation was had.
I misspoke. I told you I wasn't at that meeting. I didn't have all the details, yeah. Apparently.
Okay, well, the first meeting in October is 2 weeks away.
I'm
so that's a big gap. So let's bring it up on Friday for me, please, and we'll allow the assembly to kind of put it to bed or ask it to be re-upped. I think some members Dalrymple's concerns are valid, and I think we need to try and hire some people to meet planes. And I've often thought we have the money available to hire folks. We have senior folks here in town that might be willing to stand back and welcome people and say, hey, here's, you know, if there's pamphlets here, grab one, or whatever it might be. It might be worth our while to see if we can't hire somebody or some folks that are willing to go out and meet the planes and just be a person on the ground to encourage people to get tested. The second thing that people need to know is that if you feel unwell, you can go up and get a free test. You can get a rapid test if you have symptoms. So if you have any of the COVID symptoms, you can go up and or book an appointment, and they will test you. So that's important, too. They want to catch this stuff early. So maybe we can look into both those things. Anybody else? Patty?
Two questions from the public. Question number one, can you take, if the booster does become available, the booster and the flu shot at the same time?
Yes.
Okay. I thought I heard you say that. Question number two, is there any plan for a flu clinic? Like last year, there was that drive-through clinic. Are there any plans for that you are aware of?
Not that I have heard. I know our public health nurse is due to arrive, I believe it is this weekend. And I haven't seen anything on the information that she has that she's conducting that. And I have not yet heard anything from Search, though I didn't ask the question specifically, but I will.
Okay. And some of the comments to me are the high dose flu shot, yeah. if that could be available this year.
It is.
Okay.
But yeah, somehow we need to get that out to the public.
All right. Anyone else with thoughts there? Lisa, one of the things that came up is where are we at with the congregate shelting contact with the Harding's Lodge?
We are going to extend that, and I will be working on that with him.
Okay. Thank you.
You and I discussed that. And
yeah, no, I
was not able to get it on this agenda.
No problem. If we need that to happen again, we could.
I can try to get that on Friday's meeting.
Anything else for us, Captain Spray?
That's all I have for today.
Be safe. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay.
And before you, are you moving on from the?
No, I've got a question. Do you have other things besides we've got?
Yeah.
I know we've got our finance director.
No, I don't have anything else.
Okay.
I just wanted to ask, I think I remember correctly, CRW was going to do a financial reevaluation of the DAP plan.
That's, and That's correct.
They promised us.
That was scheduled to be done on the 15th of the month, and they CRW got hacked, and they were closed down, and so their stuff is delayed, and I will find out from Amber. Do you have the update on that?
October 13th is their updated time frame.
Okay.
They lost up to 2 weeks of data on many projects, fortunately not on ours, but nonetheless, I think their recovery of all the projects that they have lost information on will still push our project back 2 weeks. October 13th is the expected completion.
Okay. Thank you.
I have a quick question regarding body cameras for the police. We've got them. Are they active? Are police wearing them?
I will let the chief answer that, please.
Sorry?
I'd like to let the chief answer
that, please. Yeah, you want to come on up, Chief Radke?
Yeah, we've been wearing them. They've been active since weeks ago, months ago.
Okay, so they're working okay, and
yeah, we've had good rapport with them. I think it's been good.
Excellent. And so there's like the procedures are all in place for them to download and dump them. And
okay. After every shift.
Good. Excellent. Well, I'm glad those are there. Thanks, Chief. Appreciate that. Anybody other questions for Lisa? Now, is Mason going to be able to speak to us tonight about how things are going for him? Is that?
He certainly can, yes.
I would preach. Come on up, Mason.
Yeah, you bet.
Give the assembly a
podium so I'm not like talking to the wall over here. Yeah, so I mean, as Lisa said, I'm going to bring my mask down. As Lisa said too, we've had some success with the fiscal year 20 audit. As soon as I came in, we wrapped up the remainder of the support requests, and they plan on issuing an unmodified opinion, which for those that aren't familiar with audit opinions, that's a good thing. They did have some immaterial findings with regards to segregation of duties and journal entries. I think that is mainly part of working for a smaller municipality. There's a very stretched resources for the city of Wrangell, and so when somebody misses, you know, work for a week or something like that, there's not a whole lot of segregation of duties that you have options to actually executing. So happy to have that come to a close nearly 15 months after the fiscal year end there. I think that's a testament mainly to it's kind of like a litmus test. I've heard somebody regard audits like that, a litmus test in the sense that it tests the strength of the financial system. So when you have an audit that carries on 15 months later, your finance system probably isn't very well constructed. You know, I have some other reports, but I'll let you guys answer some, you know, ask some questions in general if you'd like.
Why don't you go through your other stuff if you've got other things to share with us?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, when's the last time that you guys were given a schedule of assets? I guess would be one of my first questions to you guys.
Never.
Yeah. So in my first 2 weeks, one of the main things I focused on was composing a list of assets. It's out there, and everybody's, you know, on the same page, and it's transparent what the general public's funds are invested in and what our cash holdings are. Right now, you have $35 million. I don't know if that's a surprise to you guys, but maybe it's a shock to some, but your underlying holdings are predominantly cash, and you have about two-thirds invested sporadically, and there's no long-term investment plan. I'd really like to team up with you guys in the succeeding months and really plan for the future. You know, you got about $10.7 million in an operating account that's generating 0.5% returns, when your permanent fund of $10.8 million is generating returns of 12%. So you can see the problem there. We have a checking account of $13,043,000.
Is that a normal accounting thing to have that high a balance in a checking account?
No, it's actually pretty scary.
I kind of never keep that much money in there because that's the account that stuff comes in and out really quick. So what action are we taking to remedy that?
Certainly. Well, just to give you some insight, I've kind of like looked at our historical, you know, financial statements and went back the last 5 years. We tend to have like a fluctuation of $1 to $2 million in that account. So it would be prudent to reduce that probably by half and probably keep about $6 million in there, just so we remain solvent on our obligations. But you know, we need to invest that money and not like we are in our operating fund. I think that calls for a change in the investment code. That probably hasn't been iterated since the J. Bush era, probably. But right now, past the permanent fund, you guys can't invest in anything that's FDIC, without FDIC insured, or that's not a certificate of time deposit or something like that. So really low risk investments that aren't yielding anything right now. I think what's most disappointing for me is we, in the last 5 years, we've missed out on one of the biggest bull markets in history. I mean, we could have been generating, you know, 12% every year for the last 5 years. Conservatively, maybe 6%, but that's a lot more than 0.5%. Those go to things like funding new garbage trucks and kind of chipping away at our capital infrastructure needs, which are, you know, $250 million, I'd probably say. So that's a little bit on the investment front.
Ryan, go ahead.
Yeah, please.
Where did you find